welcome back to Farm Talk. I'm Mick Kerr, coming to you live today from the Delta in Fargo. Beautiful place. It's been a great place to have a convention, and they've got a great convention here. It is the Dakota Innovation Research Technology Workshop, the clever acronym for DIRT. And the soil on your farm and building soil health is what this is all about. And from the Southeast Saskatchewan Research Farm, just across the border from Bowbells, North Dakota, is Lana Shaw. Hello, Lana.
Hello.
And tell us what you do up there in the southeast corner of Saskatchewan.
So I run a research farm, and we do research trials on all kinds of different crops that are relevant to the Northern Dakotas, Western Manitoba, and Southeast Saskatchewan. And the reason I'm here, I'm down talking, is about the intercrops, because we are trying to grow two grain crops at the same time.
And which two in the same field at the same time?
I've tried, honestly, about 25 different combinations of species of crops. So we've tried a lot of different kinds. One of the ones that we've had most success with was chickpeas and flax together.
Interesting.
And I'm also doing some work on oats and peas and canola, peas with mustard. I've done some lentils with mustard. So there's a lot of different combinations. There's so many possible combinations of two crops that I'm not going to work myself out of a job here anytime soon. And then you can even do three crop combinations with the intention of separating three different crops and selling them. That's a harder task so it's best to start with two usually, but it's an exciting field of endeavors that I've been working in for a few years.
All right. Excuse me while I adjust your microphone here a little bit. But so I guess the obvious question is why? What would be the benefits of putting two crops together in the same field at the same time?
So it's definitely not just about showing off or trying to be impressive. It's trying to be more biologically adaptive. So it's realizing that there's niches in the field, and some crops do better in certain areas of the field, some crops do worse. So if you have two crops, it tends to allow a more functional crop that has some more resilience than one crop would on its own. That, of course, comes with complications. So it's something that this is a good time of year to start thinking about. Do I want to do this? How would I do it? Just putting two crops together randomly is not the approach. It takes some planning, intentionality, and finding out what research has been done. Talking to me or you know, Mike Ostley at Carrington, or people that have done trials, and also talking to farmers that have done it, so that you've got the best chance of success at it.
Farmers are using cover crops, a cocktail of cover crops, to accomplish a certain soil health benefit. And I can see we're separating chickpeas and flax. That's probably an easy job. But what are some of the more challenging? What are you using, a specific gravity sorter, or what type of a sorting mechanism do you use?
Well, we're mainly using a screen type mechanism, but what this is actually, there's over 100,000 acres of, for all of the intercrops combined, over 100,000 acres of this planted last year in Saskatchewan. So
wow.
It's been commercialized, and those people are using a combination of rotary screen dockage cleaners, that sort of entry level, all the way up to more sophisticated grain cleaning type of equipment. So your simple things to separate, like a chickpea flax or a pea and mustard, you can use these dockage type cleaners. Some people have bought equipment to be able to separate poor quality durum from decent quality durum. I've heard that there's some capacity out there from the bad fusarium years. So some of that capacity is now being used to separate intercrops.
So, again, obviously, it goes back to this original question, why? I mean, are farmers going to make more money? And what happens to the yield, say, for chickpeas and flax?
Okay, the yield often is higher, not always. The input costs are usually less, so there's generally more profit. And you'll notice I'm not saying always, because that would be foolish.
Well, that's like saying there's always money to be made in farming every year. This year has been a disaster for many.
It's been a really hard year. It's been a hard year for the intercroppers too. There's, you know, people with, you know, the chickpeas all turned to mush and you know, some bad situations. But there's some inherent resiliency in having those, you know, more than one crop growing together. So if one of them is suffering from a disease, the other one might be able to compensate. And we're actually getting reductions in disease in particular the chickpea flax. So there's an obvious cost. There ends up being a cost savings in being able to having to use less fungicide applications, which is an immediate just time savings and cost savings. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll get to the point where nobody bothers growing chickpeas that doesn't have at least some flax in it, because there's such an obvious benefit to growing those crops together. And then there's lots of other ones where it might make the crop less attractive to pests, to insect pests. So this confuses the insect pests. They're looking for a great big field of corn or soybeans or something. They're not looking for these crop mixtures, so it tends to throw them off. And so you might save on, there's some cost savings, but it also, the reason I was invited to the dirt workshop is because it's part of one of those principles that they're promoting is diversity. And this is a way that people can get diversity in their field with still doing grain cropping without necessarily, you can do the cover crops, but there's some of these drier areas where it's really hard to figure out how does that pay off economically. Whereas you plant two grain crops and harvest two grain crops, that's a simpler calculation for how did I make money on increasing my diversity.
Yeah, farmers are encouraged to have diversity of chemistry in their weed management control programs, and diversity is a good thing. But diversity, two crops in the same field, how long did it take you, how many years has it taken you to get to 100,000 acres of interseeded crops in Saskatchewan?
We don't actually have good data before 2018 or before 2017. So we rely on the crop insurance to tell us who's doing what in the province. And if they're not asking if you're intercropping, then no one knows whether or not you are. I think it was happening at a quite low level for generations. There's always been intercropping being done, pea and canola. This is not something that we invented. But I would say in the last 5 years, it's gone from probably, it might have only been 10,000 acres in the whole province, and we're over 100 now.
So it's increased tenfold. How many more acres from 100,000 do you think you'll have next year?
I don't know. Uh-huh. Maybe. It seems like it's been close to doubling every year, and I don't know how long that will persist.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm hoping for that next year I'll be able to say we're over 200,000. That would be nice.
It's possible. Well, you'd have to get some of those canola fields harvested before you can plant something in them. What is the unharvested acreage up there this year?
I don't have those numbers. I can't say, but driving around, there's a lot of the canola swaths. I think people have some chance at trying to get something off them in the spring, but the canola that wasn't swathed, I think, is not really going to be harvestable. And then there's peas or barley or things that aren't going to be harvestable at all. I don't even know how people are going to deal with them in the spring, but it's not like it's completely unprecedented to have spoiled crop laying in the field in the spring.
What is a good intercropped crop with canola?
Peas are quite good. Maturity difference in the canola is usually later than the peas.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a problem.
The reason I ask is because there's a lot of all those shattered canola that's still standing. Can't you just no-till ends the other crop and there you go?
Unintentional intercrops?
Yes.
There are a lot of unintentional volunteer intercrops that end up happening, and that's one of the ways that sometimes people start doing voluntary intercrops is by starting out with an involuntary one. So some people are going to have a lot of canola volunteers this year because of some bad conditions. So one of the ones actually is soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
If you know you're going to have a lot of volunteers, you might just grow soybeans and harvest those two crops together and separate the grain. But it's not really something, I'm not sure that you'd plan to do it. It's a possibility.
Yeah. Well, like you said, unintended intercropping. But the future is there. So if you're doing it up there and guys are making maybe a little more money because of less input costs, there's certainly a future for it in the lower 48 then, huh?
Yeah, there is intercropping being done in the Dakotas, but I don't know who would be collecting data on that.
Maybe Mike Ostley at Carrington.
I don't know. I think you need to have you need to either have surveys of farmers to find out who is doing it and how, or some other means of data collection, because how are we going to learn how common the practice is until someone asks the questions?
Science is not guessing.
No.
It's good data.
Yes, you need good data for understanding commercial trends, and also for doing the research trials, which is my bread and butter. So yeah. I go around doing speaking tours and giving farmers instructions, but the reason I'm able to do that is because I've been doing the research trials on this for 7 years.
And what are you going to be working on in 2020?
I think we'll try flax and fava beans again.
Mm-hmm.
Peas and oats, hopefully. Maybe a pea canola trial if that one gets funded. And then definitely our chickpea flax trial is continuing again. It's funded by Western Grains Research Foundation and SaskFlax and the Saskatchewan government.
It's a totally new idea to a lot of people. And again, should they start, do 10 acres, 20 acres? 80? What's a good place to start?
Well, every farmer decides these things for themselves, and I usually tell them to start small. And I mean it, and usually they ignore me.
Mm-hmm.
But there are good reasons. Just for logistics of getting used to the equipment, but a lot of farmers figure if they're not seeding an entire field of one thing, that it's not worth the bother. But I think that's kind of the wrong attitude, because you're going to learn something whether it's on 10 acres or 160. So it's for your first year, I think it's even just trying a new combination of crops. It's a good idea to start with 40 acres or less, and then you have less at risk if you're having trouble separating the crop or something is not good with the maturities lining up, or there's a problem with harvest or weed control, then you've got less of a problem to deal with.
Yeah. Interesting.
And then no angry calls to me.
Yeah. All right. Yes. But if people do have some questions about this, how do they get a hold of you up there at the Southeast Research Farm in Saskatchewan?
Southeast Research Farm. I guess they can call me at 306-452-7253. And also, I'm on Twitter. I don't know how many of your North Dakota farmers are on Twitter, but Twitter is
most of them.
That's a really good way to find out about intercropping. And there's this hashtag intercrop innovators, all one word, that I've been using to try to connect farmers and the research that's been going on intercropping. So that's probably the best way to see what I'm doing and ask questions. And I can help amplify people's, if people want to know, how to set their combine or mm-hmm. something that I don't have that much experience with, I can help by amplifying their questions to people that might have some answers.
All right. Interesting. Lana Shaw of the, you're one of the intercropping innovators.
Yes.
We'll search for you on Twitter. Thank you for the great visit and good luck in up in Saskatchewan with what's probably going to be a wet spring for everybody again.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you for the visit.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Thanks for coming south here. Is it warmer in Fargo today than up in?
Yes, it's a little bit colder of a polar chill in Saskatchewan right now.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. What a tough cold snap we're having. So, alrighty. Thank you.